So much. And thank you for the prayer. It was beautiful and so appropriate. And thank you for the introduction. Yeah, I was thinking, I have a friend here. He's not always here. He's seasonal down here. And he grew up in Italy. And I remember his wife told me he was touched by Padre Pio, who's a saint. And I thought, wow, you know, it made me think, and I'm getting goosebumps right now because, you know, being touched by the Dalai Lama, I feel, is like being touched by a saint, you know, and I had a private meeting with him and he, you know, rubbed my ear very gently and sweetly, and also being touched by Mother Teresa. So I feel like, you know, I talk to my friends about this that are closest to me, that these aren't just gifts for me, they're gifts to share, and maybe I can do it in some small way. Here, you know, I hope that I do all my teachers, you know, that I pay homage to them and that they, that I'm worthy of transmitting something on their behalf, because I feel like that's all that's informed me. But let's get on. So I'm talking about today the awakening of the soul, which I can think of no better thing for us to think about. And I'm going to try to bring it into really practical focus as well. And I want to cite where I'm drawing this inspiration from, and it's from a Sufi Message Volume 5. It's on spiritual liberty, and it's a section 6, which is on metaphysics, and it's called Journey to the Goal. And these are teachings that are in a huge, vast volume of teachings by Hazrat, which is an honorific title of a teacher that is deceased, and his name was Anayat Khan, and he's from India. Passed away in 1927, so we are very inspired by his teachings and their living teachings. I think that's so important that they're we can make them alive. So there's a quote that I wanted to begin with, and it says this: as the light of the sun helps the plant to grow, so the divine spirit helps the soul towards its perfection. And I want to begin with two examples, and hopefully they'll be a focal point as we move through this this sermon or this teaching. There's two examples. One's a symbolic gesture that happens, and one is a symbolic visualization. So for the symbolic gesture, perhaps some of you have had the opportunity to travel to India, and you know that I've lived and worked there and spent quite a bit of time there. And I make it a habit, as a Sufi, we study all different world religions. And so when I'm there, I go to the Baha'i temple, and I go to the Hindu temples, and I go to the Buddhist temples, and I go to the Catholic church. And I like to experience those things, because for me, doing that makes me realize the commonality in things. But there's something that we do when we go to visit a Hindu temple, and perhaps that's even done in Kansas City, where there's a Hindu temple. There's little stands outside the temple, and you can buy artifacts to be blessed in the temple, but you can also buy things to be offered in the temple. And so one of the things, there are several things. You can get garlands of flowers, which are sometimes roses, very commonly marigolds, meaning wisdom, the gold color, but you take coconuts inside. So you purchase these coconuts. And do y'all know about this ritual? It's a great, great ritual, and it's a great metaphor, and it's a great symbolic gesture. So you buy the coconuts, and when you go into the temple, you give them to the priest. And the priest takes them and proceeds to very harshly smash them, like on a stone. And what happens is they break open. But what is it symbolic of? So first of all, you know, the coconuts that we see in the stores, and that's true there also, they have that dark brown outer hard shell, right? You know what I'm talking about. So the breaking of that open is symbolic of sort of shattering our human ego, meaning our negative emotions, which include pride, anger, attachment, etc. But what happens when you crack it open? You get this beautiful, pure white flesh inside, and it's sweet and it's beautiful, and that symbolizes purity and devotion, and it symbolizes the soul. So we could almost think of that brown outer shell as like our presentation to the world or a representation of our body. And when we open that up inside and we see this light, which hopefully we can be in touch with, and we're going to work with that today, then there's this sweetness that can come forth. We don't have to hide that. But what is more inside of that is this sterile, fresh water that's been completely protected by these outer layers. And that's what the soul is. So we have the body. We could say we also have the mind, the heart, and then the soul. And that soul is something that we're gifted with upon our birth. It's a spark of the divine light that comes with us. And it's up to us to sort of activate that and to live from that perspective, because sometimes it's hidden and we don't realize it through our learning process. So this act of offering a coconut, and we're kind of can be a coconut, is cleansing and to the heart and to the soul. Now, Anayat Khan gives another example in this teaching. So I want to give you both of them because I think they're both good examples. He talks about the heart of every person is like a globe over a light. So if you could think of kind of a hurricane lamp. And he says, when the globe is dusty, naturally the light is dim, you know, or a lampshade. I always dust my lampshades every week. But when it's clean, the light can shine out. So this globe, when it gets dusty, why is it dusty? Well, it's these conditions of life that can do that, that can obscure that light. And you've all lived long enough to know what those things are. They can be hurts, or they can be accusations, or they can be misunderstandings. And those things all are like dust on the globe of the heart. But we want to cleanse that and increase the light. And the light is always the same. It just may be covered with this dust. I remember this line, another one of my teachers, the son, the elder son of Anayat Khan, and his name was Vilayat. And he would often say, the soul is never tarnished, as a mirror is never tarnished by the images that are cast upon it. And he would give us this visualization. And in fact, in Buddhist traditions, when they do pujas, they use a mirror and they cleanse it. So same sort of visualization. So we're looking for clarity. We're looking for radiance. And Anayat Khan teaches us that when the radiance shines out, it shows itself through our countenance, through our expression, and through our atmosphere. You know, when you're just around someone and they make you feel better, that's soul power. And it is the soul power that freely projects outward when this globe of the heart is clear and we feel safe to do that. The radiance of the soul is not only power, but it's inspiration too. So it's like this deep wisdom that's inside that we can get in touch with, that's beyond anything that we might learn from a worldly perspective. And so it helps us understand life better. It clears away confusions, like clearing the dust from the lamp. And the secret of life and the nature of things are revealed to us. We get insight. Now, Anayat Khan teaches us, because Sufism is called, Anayat Khan says, you can't really call Sufism a religion, but if you did call it a religion, it would be the religion of the heart. So we're always pointing to the heart, and we do practices that are about polishing the mirror of the heart, just constantly cleaning away the rust, cleaning away the dust. So love is the best means of making the heart capable of reflecting this light or this soul power. Love in the sense, listen to this, pain rather than pleasure. So I don't know about you, but some of my greatest lessons of life have come through pain, disappointment, illness, loss, accident. Our friend Neil's about to get a little something removed. That's that, you know, you can think about that as a great example of removing some of the dross, you know, and lightening your load, so to speak. So just like the coconut, you know, think about that coconut that gets cracked open. When something happens that opens us in that way, the light shines out, just like in the coconut, this beautiful white, sweet flesh and this protected, precious, purified water inside. And that's what, we're not seeking that, but what we can do is see when those things happen, they're actually a great blessing. And you know, I've heard it so, my mother used to say it, and I know you've heard it too. It's like, that which does not destroy us makes us stronger. And I think it makes us wiser as well. So every blow, these are an icon's words, every blow opens the door of the heart, allowing this soul power to come forth. We can use these things as agents of change and transformation. Any difficulty. I gave a talk a couple of times about thank you, God, for everything. I don't think I'd done it here. But in that life, in those talks, I've kind of made my soul or my heart bare. I talked about many disappointments and challenges in life, and what I kept saying as I was going through them, what's next? What's happening really? And I would say, thank you, God, for protecting me, because it might have felt like a loss, but in such a profound sense, it was a gain. It got me onto another path that I wasn't on, and redirected me. So those things can be really taken to heart. I remember I was having a conflict at one point, and I was in a car with a very old Sufi, and I like being around the older people because I feel like they have so much wisdom. And she looked at me and she said, well, Nuria, what do you think God's trying to teach you? And putting it in that light changed everything. You know, it's like, yeah, I just have to tune in. You know, I'm like, I have too much static, but if I tune in, God's there giving a lesson. What is it? So the concrete manifestations of soul power can be witnessed in the depth of the voice, in the way people choose to use their words, in the form of a sentence or a phrase, in every movement, in someone's posture, the way they pose when they're relaxed, a gesture, an expression. It's all there. They can be sensual expressions of the soul. Even the atmosphere speaks through all of this. And although it may be difficult for some people to experience this, but I don't know about you, if you've ever had an opportunity to sit before someone you consider really very wise and there's a blessing to be with them, all of a sudden you're speechless. There don't seem to be any questions because everything that arises seems perfectly clear in their atmosphere. It's such an amazing blessing. So another example that an icon gives us is that the heart could be likened to soil. And soil, of course, we know can be very fertile or can be very barren. And but the soil that's fertile, what do we see? We see things growing. We see that it bears fruit. We see that it draws life. And beings like to dwell in these places. In my Tibetan Buddhist practices, my teacher gave me instructions of how to build the field of merit. And it is the fertile soil. We visualize beautiful mountains and valleys. Kyle, you can think about this as you go visit your sister in the mountains, experiencing the lushness of them with beautiful trees full of fruit, filled with birds and animals that are not afraid to be together. Everything's peaceful, and it's an infinite merit that we create, and then we do our practices to that. So that's the fertile soil, and that's the way, one example that it's brought into Tibetan Buddhism. I go back and forth. I'm very, you know, I draw upon all these traditions, which is very Sufi, because we study the world religions. I mean, that's part of it, in an effort to see the commonality instead of the differences. We don't ignore the differences because those are beautiful and they have something to teach us, but we can draw upon them and we can understand where they come together and what's in common. So while some souls may be lost in these deserts, and that can lead someone, and so check yourself, you know, where are you? I mean, are you in the field of grief and loneliness? Those are temporary conditions, unless someone has a really chronic, and I feel so, I offer prayers for people that suffer from, truly from chronic depression. But for most of us, those are temporary situations, and they can be looked at as a way of saying, maybe I need to shift my view. I want to look towards that fertile soil, those beautiful trees, those incredible landscapes, because that's what we are inside. The more beauty, the touchstones of Sufism are love, harmony, and beauty. And so to concentrate on beauty, things that are beautiful to us, whether it's music or art or landscapes, it feeds the soul, it really does. So we have both these things in us, and when we're experiencing one, again, from my Buddhist orientation, they say, whenever you're experiencing beautiful food or a beautiful environment, take it in and then offer it for all beings. Just say, may all beings have these beautiful experiences. That enlivens the soul, it projects it outwards. But if we're feeling we're in the desert, just sit, recognize it, see what is trying to be taught to us, and shift the view to something beautiful. Shift that view. So again, we can use this metaphor as when we feel full and we're fertile, we have something to give to people. And we feel barren, we maybe are contracted and don't have much to give, but that's okay too. That's part of life, it's part of living, it's part of our experience. But it's also a signal to awaken. Oh, I can shift something just like that. Wake up, shake yourself awake. A person, he says, a person whose soul becomes awakened to everything one sees and hears. And this is a different kind, a deeper kind of seeing and hearing. Anayat Khan says, it's hearing with the ears of the heart and seeing with the eyes of the heart. So we're very open here, very open. And that's why seeing to the awakened soul is called insight. Someone would say this person's very intuitive. They have a lot of insight. They have an inner knowing, but we're getting in touch with that soul power. That's what we're trying to do. The moment the soul is awakened, the soul appreciates life in a different way. And the soul is no longer sleeping. It's awake. It begins to enjoy life to the full extent. And I know from my own experience, it might seem strange to say I enjoy things that startle me or shake me somehow, but those are the points that I really pay attention to. I try to wake up. What's the message? What's coming through? What do I need to learn from this? And then I'm thankful. I can turn that shock into gratitude. And so think about that. I think that's a great lesson for us all to learn. It is this awakening of the soul that's mentioned in the Bible, that unless we are born again, we'll not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now that sounds very, you know, I'm beating my Bible, but the truth is what it really means is that the soul is born again when it awakens to its soul power here on earth. And entering the kingdom of heaven means entering into this world on earth, realizing that we have this divine spark within, and knowing that by enlivening that, we're bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth. And you all know the Lord's Prayer. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That's it. That's it. That's what we're trying to do. And I hope we all can. I'm sure you can. It's both interesting to be on earth and to realize to one person this earth can be a heaven, but to another perhaps it's kind of a hell. And then again, it's a signal. Let me change my point of view. Let me look at things differently. This change, it doesn't come by study. We can get a little bit a glimpse there. But it only comes from changing the point of view. And then he says, and I like this because, you know, I was in academia my whole career, and I witnessed this. He says, we all know, have known people who seek after truth. They study books about truth. They even write many books on philosophy and theology themselves. They may be theologians. I've met them. They're still confused. They ask me, what do you think of this? And we have some wonderful conversations. So we're not going to get there necessarily through the mind, through study, through our rational thought. It's more of a feeling, and we can think about that. And this shows that only one thing that brings us face to face with that reality, and it's trying to enliven the light of the soul. Now, let me just say something here, because it's very interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, they talk about the Atman, and they talk about the placement of the light of the soul is like behind the physical heart, which really relates to what an icon's saying. I like to think of it as within. They liken it to about the size of the thumb that's placed there to be enlivened. So you can think about this as being a flame or a light that we're wanting to just light ourselves up. Okay. All tragedy, this is an icon's words, all tragedy in life, all misery and disharmony are caused by the lack of understanding. And lack of understanding is because we lack insight. When one doesn't look at life from the point of view that one should, or could, we could say, then one becomes disappointed because one can't understand. Then we're in this confused state. Well, my friend Gemma, you'll see her when we go to the community part of the class, she would say, the world ain't your mama. She says that all the time. Well, that's true. The world ain't our mama. It's up to ourselves to grow up and to try to shake ourselves awake, do our practices, do our meditations, try to grow in love and sympathy. So I'm almost done. I see the time's getting close, but I'm going to do a meditation after this, so we'll continue for a little bit. So there's a further continuation of the soul, and that is when a person that is awakened throws light, the light of the soul, upon everything, everyone, every circumstance, and it illuminates that. And when that light of the soul is awakened, it's like as if we can take it as a torch in our hands and illuminate our path. Imagine that. Now, I have to tell you a story. You may not believe me. That's okay. I know what the experience was. I've had the opportunity to do retreats once high in the Alps and once high up in the mountains in upper state New York. No light, completely off the grid. You know, we're in tents. People have to use flashlights. But there were times where I didn't want to get out of my tent or my little cabin space with a flashlight because I was fearful I would, well, I don't know, fearful. I was concerned that I might awaken someone from their sleep. So I tried to make my way in absolute darkness. And the truth was, we had done so many practices. And I guess we all have that, you know, that kind of radiance around our body. There was a light source that was coming from where I couldn't say, but I could see my path. It was a soft light, but it was illuminating. And it happened in both those places. And I think it was because we had reached a certain state of through our practices where we had increased our radiance and our glow. So again, this is like this light. We can throw this into the dark corners of our mind or a situation to make it clear and illuminated. And it's like it can illuminate the solution to problems. It can give us the reason for those problems. It makes things clear. And this is true sympathy. It's a sympathetic quality that can tune us to any circumstance or person. It's like a sympathetic vibration that comes from this illumination, this light, this torch in our hands. So as soon as life becomes clear, the soul is awakened. And there's another phase of realization. And this is the aspect that everything is communicating to us. Now the ears of the heart are open, the eyes of the heart are open, and we see and experience things in a different way. And how do we get there? Well, it doesn't take a lot of time. If we are skillful, we can go inside for a few minutes and we can get in touch with this place. And this place is enlivening, it's enlightening, it's refreshing, it gives us power, it gives us inspiration, and we can see life in a better light because we're looking with the light of our soul. And sometimes at the college, I needed a breather, and the only way to get it was to enter the ladies' room and close the stall. I'd say a little prayer and just sit there for a little bit just to feel this light, feel this, because what I wanted to do, my prayer was to give to the students, not take away from them. So I wanted to amp up this light to give them. In the scriptures, it says, let's just say, we are this light. I hope you get that. I hope you know that. And in the scriptures, it says, a light whose origin or whose source is divine. And that's the great gift. It's like we have that spark when we're giving to the Lord, just this aspect of the divine impulse that comes to earth. And my teachers have always said, we are here so that God can see and also understand and experience him, herself. So we have a role in that too, from that divine purpose. So this gift, again, is that divine spark. It lets us shine our light brightly and beautifully in all circumstances. And I think you've heard this expression, when you're given lemons, make lemonade. Well, I'm going to say, keep the light on, just like Motel 6. Turn that light on and keep shining, shining, shining. Now, I think I've taken up my time for my talk, but I'd like to take just a few moments before we have our musical meditation, and I'll let you know, Kyle, when to do that. And I'd like for us to just turn within. If you feel comfortable, close your eyes and take some deep breaths. And feel your heart. Now, I want to say this heart space goes from here all the way down. Take that space. You might even put your hands there. And Neil, this will be good for you to give some nurturing to that space where your gallbladder will be removed and let it be filled with light. But just breathe into that area. And it can be a sensation of your physical heart, but hopefully you can start to see your spiritual heart. And we can use that metaphor of the coconut, or we can use the metaphor of the globe on the lamp of the heart. And what we want to do is we want to go into that space. For me, I always see it as a kind of shrine that I enter. It could be a cave, it could be a beautiful temple, a cathedral, but it's filled with light, and I'm entering into that space through the heart. And the light can be brilliant, it can be soft, it can embrace you, it can touch you in whatever way feels good for you. But you've entered this space. And now just experience that. Feel the refreshing, restful, illuminating quality. And I'd like to suggest here, if there's anything that's niggling at you, it could be a person, a situation at work, anxiety about a trip, the operation that's coming up, any of that, it works really well with a circumstance or a challenging individual in one's life. You know, invite them to come into that space with you. No judgment, just open, beautiful light. And we can use this meditation to gain insight. We can change our point of view. We can ask without expectation, just very gently ask, what is it that I can do to understand this situation or this person better? And just sit with it for a moment longer. And know that this space is within you, and it can be different at different times, but you always want it to be beautiful and inviting for yourself and whatever else you're asking to enter into that space with you. And we bless that space for being there with us, and we vow to visit it again, and we vow to let it inform our being, enlighten, illuminate, give inner wisdom to help be a guide, because that guide is always there. And remember, like opening the coconut, sometimes we have to, you know, knock on this coconut to the head to get through it. But what we really want to do is knock on the doors of the heart. Isn't that what Jesus said? Knock and it shall be open to you. Ask and it will be given. This is the light of your soul. I want to thank you for inviting me to be here. It's always so wonderful. I feel like I'm joining with old and very familiar friends. And now we have, if you will, Kyle, a musical meditation. Thank you so much. God bless. Original sound for musicians, please. Click that in your, mine's in the upper right corner. Could you do that? I'm so sorry. It's getting garbled. Are you there?